This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, February 6, 2013. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, two poems walk into a bar. Rosie Schapp is the drink columnist for the New York Times Magazine. That means that every month, Rosie gets to write about some of her favorite things, drinks, drinking, and all that goes with the enjoyment of drinks and drinking, which is to say, quite a lot. So much so that she's written a book, a memoir, about her life in bars called Drinking with Men. Now, Rosie, your book is in part, it's not only about your love of bars and bar culture, but poetry frequently comes up in your anecdotes. Why is that? What is the connection between poetry and bars?
Well, I think there are several connections, Curtis. But for me, I guess the main thing is that those of us who love bars bring all of the stuff we love into bars with us.
Yeah.
So if you're a massive sports fan, of course, that's something you're going to talk to your drinking buddies about.
Yeah.
And the same is true if you're a massive poetry fan. What has surprised me over the years is how indulgent my bar friends have been of my poetry fixation.
And they're not necessarily poetry readers themselves.
Not all of them, that's true. Mm-hmm. But I have met poets in bars on both sides. I've met great poets behind the bar serving my drinks.
Uh-huh.
I've met poets sitting at a bar. And even the people who aren't so into poetry, they kind of have accepted that, well, it's Rosie's thing, and we'll let her have it, no big deal, and we can put up with it for a couple hours a week.
So one of the things we want to talk about today is poetry and bars, but not only the poetry about bars, but the poetry that you yourself have recited in bars.
Uh-huh.
And you had a standard number back in the day. Can you describe where you were at this point in your life and why this poem came up?
Yeah, this was when I was in college, so this was in the early 90s. I was an English major, no big shock there.
Mm-hmm.
And even though romanticism was really my favorite thing and what I eventually focused on, what's not to love about Shakespeare sonnets?
Mm-hmm.
Around that time, I had heard a lecture by Helen Venler,
the great critic at
Harvard. Great critic, whose book about Shakespeare sonnets, I think, hadn't come out yet, but she was working on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard her read, not at my college, you know, I traveled. I was a little bit of a Helen Venler groupie, and she talked about how, as a graduate student, she decided to memorize all of Shakespeare's sonnets.
Wow.
Helen Venler can do that.
Yeah.
I couldn't, but I memorized some favorites.
Okay.
And this one, which I think is number 129.
Yeah, but neither of us know where Latin numerals are.
Roman numerals have completely eluded us at this point.
Yeah.
But this is just such a great sonnet and such fun to recite.
And this will be very familiar to listeners. So imagine we're in a bar. Rosie's had a few, and so have you.
Right.
And this is what she's going to deliver by memory, usually. Not right now, but in the bar, by heart.
The expense of spirit in a waste of shame is lust in action, and till action, lust is perjured, murderous, bloody, full of blame, savage, extreme, rude, cruel, not to trust. Enjoyed no sooner, but despised straight, past reason hunted, and no sooner had, past reason hated as a swallowed bait, on purpose laid to make the taker mad. Mad in pursuit and in possession so, had, having, and in quest to have, extreme, a bliss in proof and proved of very woe, before a joy proposed, behind a dream. All this the world well knows, yet none knows well, to shun the heaven that leads men to this hell.
Now, this poem is generally read as being about sex.
Sure.
But when I first read this poem, I was an adolescent, and I thought of it in terms of masturbation.
Wow.
And it still reads quite well.
Oh, certainly that first line, the expense of spirit and a waste of shame. I see where you're getting that.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to be an adolescent boy to pick that up.
Yeah, but that's how I read it, and now I understand it as an adult and a little bit differently. But since we're in a virtual bar right now, now. This poem could also be about drinking too much, getting drunk, waste the expense of spirit in a waste of shame. So was this a warning to your fellow bargoers?
Maybe on a very quiet subconscious level, just this sort of idea of wastefulness. I mean, of course, the word spirit can help us in our reading of the poem this way.
Right.
No poem I've recited in a bar can quiet a room like this. And of course, also the dirtiness of it.
The shame. And
the dirtiness, the shame, the occasional rage. We've all been there in some way or other.
A bliss in proof and proved a very woe. Mm. That says a lot about a lot of what we do.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, that cautionary closing couplet could easily be applied to liquor.
Mm-hmm.
We all know not to drink too much.
Yeah, we do. What are you going to do? Now, we have spoken about drinking and poetry before on this podcast, and that was recorded with Jeff Gordinier in a bar about 2 years ago.
Right.
And you read some poems related to drinking, but you said afterwards that you regretted not reading one of the Bar Napkin Sonnets by Moira Egan.
I did regret that. It hit me the next morning, I think, and I woke up and I thought, why didn't I read one of Moira Egan's great Bar Napkin Sonnets?
Well, now's your chance.
Fantastic.
We happen to have one of her Bar Napkin Sonnets up on our website. What should we expect out of this?
Well, as with the Shakespeare we just heard, it's a formal poem. It's a sonnet, which I think is really interesting. I think we often think of bars as these very casual, relaxed places.
Mm-hmm.
There's something so easy to read and so fluid about her poems, and she has a whole book full of them.
It suggests Bar Napkins, something that she jotted down while in the bar.
Exactly. So there's this interesting formality and total informality at the same time.
Yeah.
These are wonderful, very satisfying poems with, I think, quite a bit of depth. But there's also this kind of, I just scratched this out on a cocktail napkin.
Yeah.
So I think it's an interesting trick that way. I feel her poems really successfully capture the feeling of being in a bar and what's wonderful about it, what's also not wonderful about it.
Yeah.
There's just a real understanding here. And I think some people can dismiss bar culture as a place where nothing too deep or too interesting happens. And Egan shows us what can really happen in our hearts and our minds when we're sitting around in a bar.
Can you give it a read here?
I would love to.
Bar Napkin Sonnet number 11.
Things happen when you drink too much mezcal. One night, with not enough food in my belly, he kept on buying. I'm a girl who'll fall damn near in love with gratitude, and, well, he was hot and generous, and so the least that I could do was let him kiss me, hard and soft and any way you want it, beast and beauty, lime and salt, sweet Bacchus pards. And when his friend showed up, I felt so warm and generous, I let him kiss me too. His buddy asked me if it was the worm inside that makes me do the things I do. I wasn't sure which worm he meant, the one I ate, the one that eats at me alone.
That's quite a twist at the end.
It sure is. Yeah. It really hits hard at the end.
Yeah, because it's such a confident poem of a woman going off and having a wonderful time and getting nice and smashed and probably having sex with one or maybe two guys.
Who knows?
And then a poison pill at the end that said maybe all this is about her wanting to escape from being alone.
Sure. And that's not so different from what made me write the book that I wrote.
Hmm.
This wonderful kind of ease one can find as a woman in this predominantly male environment.
Mm-hmm.
Most bar regulars are guys. So if you're a woman who spends a lot of time in bars, you kind of have to assimilate.
Yeah.
But there are often reminders that you are not one of them.
What would be one of those reminders?
Well, I think, you know, things very much like what Moira Egan describes in this poem, certainly sexual tension, attraction.
Yeah.
And for me, that really poignant, sad, hard ending of this poem, you know, it also reminds me uncomfortably, which is fine. I think it's fine for a poem to make you uncomfortable. I think that's a good thing. Of a lot of the unpleasant associations people have very broadly with the idea of a woman at a bar. That, of course, she has to be sad.
Right.
She has to be escaping something. I think all of us are sad sometimes and have to escape things sometimes. And that's not what has driven me into bars for most of my life. But there are nights like that when you feel that.
Yeah.
Something's wrong with me. What am I doing here?
Yeah. Bar culture, in my experience, has deteriorated quite a bit because of the omnipresence of television and sports and in bars.
Yeah.
And I find it hard to go into a bar and carry on a conversation. Maybe I'm just a little shy or whatever it is. What is your ideal kind of bar?
Right. Well, you know, as you suggest, so much of it is about reading a bar.
Hmm.
You know, if I walk into a place and there's 20 blaring television sets, I walk right out.
Yeah.
I want a bar. I still want a bar. I've always wanted a bar where I can meet someone and have a conversation. For me, that's the best thing that bars give us.
With a stranger.
With a stranger who might not stay a stranger for very long.
Yeah.
So I tend to gravitate towards a small neighborhood bar.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily an out-and-out dive, but a place that's really rooted in its community. A place that clearly has regulars.
Mm-hmm.
I like some dark wood. I like big windows. I like tiled floors. I like all of those old-fashioned markers that say bar.
Mm.
And either no TV, or you'll find in many bars there's a TV, but they don't have the sound on. You know, there will still be music on, but if somebody really wants to watch the Knicks or the Mets or whatever, they can do that, but it's not going to take over the bar.
Yeah. I want to play a poem for you by Heather McHugh.
Oh, great.
And she has made peace in this poem with the TV culture of bars in a funny way.
Mm-hmm.
It was published in Poetry Magazine just a few years ago in 2008. Here's Heather McHugh reading Spacebar.
Spacebar. Lined up behind the space bartender is the meaning of it all. The vessels marked with letters, numbers, signs. Beyond the flats, the monitor looms, for all the world like the world. Images and motions, weeping women, men in hats. I have killed many happy hours here with my bare hands, where TV passes for IV among the space cadets and dingbats.
She's very funny.
She's very funny and wonderfully playful in her poem.
Yes.
Here she is in a bar that she apparently frequents. She's killed many hours, many happy hours in this place. And there's the monitor looms large in this, the TV monitors, and the rather odd images that she refers to.
Images and motions, weeping women, men in hats.
Whereas TV is usually about sports and news and stuff like that.
Right.
But she is sort of medicalizes the bar.
Where TV passes for IV.
Well, of course, many people think of it as that place where we go to self-medicate.
Yes.
I think that joke is certainly in here.
Very much self-medication, but
cheerful. Making the TV more of a medication than the alcohol in a way is an interesting move.
Yeah.
But it is cheerful. I find it funny and endearing, even if she's kind of making fun of her fellow bar goers.
But she's one of them. She's not accepting herself as somebody who's not a space cadet or a dingbat.
Mm-hmm.
are there any other bar poems that have ever appealed to you, can you think?
Yes. I mean, certainly Gary Snyder's fantastic. I think it counts as a classic at this point. I went into the Maverick Bar.
Well, why don't you give that one a read? Gary Snyder, of course, is the Zen Buddhist poet who was a hard-living, hard-drinking, hard-working fellow when he was a young man, associated with the San Francisco Renaissance and all that. Go ahead and read this one.
I went into the Maverick Bar in Farmington, New Mexico, and drank double shots of bourbon backed with beer. My long hair was tucked up under a cap. I'd left the earring in the car. Two cowboys did horseplay by the pool tables. A waitress asked us, "Where are you from?" A country and western band began to play, "We Don't Smoke Marijuana in Muskogee." And with the next song, a couple began to dance. They held each other like in high school dances in the 50s. I recalled when I worked in the woods and the bars of Madras, Oregon. That short-haired joy and roughness, America. Your stupidity. I could almost love you again. We left, onto the freeway shoulders, under the tough old stars. In the shadow of bluffs, I came back to myself, to the real work, to what is to be done.
Now, that poem does quite a bit.
It does
a lot. In the four stanzas. First, if he goes into a bar in New Mexico, Farmington, New Mexico is not fancy New Mexico.
It ain't Taos.
No.
Right.
It's not Taos or New Mexico or Santa Fe.
Right.
He drinks double shots of bourbon back with beer, but he tucks his long hair. He's trying to disguise his hippie aspect. He hides his earrings, leaves them in the car, and tucks it under. And the band is playing an anti-marijuana
song. An anti-hippie song.
An anti-hippie song. Yep. And then he has this wonderful reminiscence about his own youth. He comes from a place like this. He worked with people like this.
Yeah.
And he thinks, America, your stupidity, I could almost love you again. But he can't. And we've all kind of felt that experience in strange bars where a community bar may be a little bit too local.
Yeah. There are places in which one feels one can fit in very, very quickly and very easily. Mm. And there are places where that doesn't really happen. And anyone who's traveled across the country, stopped in a small town, walked into a little local bar where people, you know, whip their heads around just like in a Western movie, and you're the stranger in the bar, you know how unsettling that can be.
Mm.
But at the same time, I think Snyder sees that just that kind of closeness in a local bar, the kind of community that happens in it, so much of its place, so much for the people who need it. And I feel that's in this poem.
Mm-hmm.
It almost makes you love it, even if they don't want you there.
Yeah. He went into the bar to escape because he went and had some serious drinks. But when he leaves the bar, it is also an escape.
Mm-hmm.
We left onto the freeway shoulders under the tough old star. That's a wonderful, wonderful.
Gorgeous.
In the shadow of bluffs, I came back to myself. So he's more at home in the world in a natural setting than he is in the confines of this bar.
Yeah.
To the real work, to what is to be done.
Right.
Presumably that would be poetry in his case.
Presumably. You know, I mean, he's such a great poet, and one thing I always find so interesting, so many people, we think of him as this Buddhist nature poet, but he's so connected to the world and its people.
Yeah.
I think he manages to do all of that so incredibly well.
Yeah. So before you leave, what are you drinking these days? What do you recommend?
Gosh, what am I drinking these days? For me, we're still deep in dark liquor season, brown liquor season.
You're talking bourbon, scotch.
Bourbon, and lately I've been really enjoying a very dry rye Manhattan.
Really?
A Manhattan just with dry vermouth, no sweet, with a lemon twist.
No bitters?
Oh, bitters, absolutely. Bring on the bitters in any Manhattan. So just a good rye, dry vermouth, classic Angostura bitters, and a lemon twist, shaken and up. That's one of my favorite drinks right now. But I'm also really loving some deep, dark, but not terribly demanding beers. And that's what my next column is about, so I'm not going to say too much.
Okay. Rosie Schapp, thanks so much.
Thank you, Curtis.
Rosie Schapp is the drink columnist for the New York Times Magazine and the author of Drinking with Men, a memoir. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.